You're listening to Grumpire with your hosts, Elby and Andrew.
Elby!
Andrew, what's up?
Butternut. Wait, is it butternut or buttercup?
Buttercup.
Chicken butt. Grumpire podcast, everybody. Hi.
Hi. Hello and welcome.
First things first, we have shirts and other merch available at TeePublic. So go there or look up Grumpire. Go to grumpire.com. You'll find stuff there to read and whatever and find ways to find our shirts. Go there.
Stuff to read and whatever. That's
yeah,
really...
I mean, there's art to look at too, man. You don't just have to, you don't read art, you look at art.
That's really, yeah, okay.
Okay, so what's the premise of the show for those who don't know?
So we have a guest on, and that guest brings us a movie that he or she does not like. Now, the stipulation is that this movie is wildly popular, or beloved by many. And
okay, which today's episode is a bit blah-blah-matic in that neither of today's episode's movies are wildly popular.
Then we talk about why the person does not like the movie. You know, it's not just a way to, you know, crap on something. It's not that at all. It's like we really try to get into why that person has these feelings towards this movie. And then we have the guest also bring the second movie, which you call The Alternate.
Yes, which is a movie that they like.
Yeah, the movie that is similar in theme in some way. You know, it could be by the same director. It could be, you know,
it's usually thematic
kind of plot. So, yeah, yeah.
So it
yeah.
was like the last episode we did was Dazed and Confused was not liked. But the liked one was Everybody Wants Some, which mm-hmm. is also somewhat of a spiritual sequel, as the marketing says, to Dazed mm-hmm. and Confused. So which one's better? To the guest, which was Typey, he said Everybody Wants Some. He liked that one and he didn't like Dazed
right.
and Confused. And we mixed it up about both of them. So
right.
who's our guest this episode?
We have a writer, director, filmmaker.
Podcast producer. Stage director.
Yes, Mr. Ben Rock. Ben's a really cool dude that we... met actually through Twitter, which is kind of hilarious. But
why is it hilarious? It's Twitter. I mean,
I don't know.
It's not like meeting your future spouse through LiveJournal.
Yeah, it's not like that at all. But
no. wink, wink, audience. Ben, yeah, we know him through Twitter, and it's been years actually since we know
yeah.
him. I ended up doing some work for his Sacred Fools theater troupe, and since then we've been pals, and it's about time that we get him on this show. So
yeah he's a really interesting person to have on this show, I think, because he's worked in the industry for decades. He was, I think, most notable, you know, in his early career as the production designer for the Blair Witch Project,
the little creepy stick people things, and making the creepy location of the house even more creepy.
Mm-hmm.
That's all his doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not all. I don't know. They had other crew members, but he was the production designer. And he's worked on a lot of B-movies before that, some David A. Pryor stuff, which a lot of you action dorks out there are really into his stuff. So Ben's been part of those scenes.
But currently he's known for working on the Shudder podcast Video Palace, which is fantastic.
Yes.
If you haven't heard it, you really, really need to check out Video Palace. It is one of the best series podcast, like of a spooky nature, but there's a really, really creepy story, and the execution of it is absolutely fantastic. I can't say it enough. It's great.
Yes. There's a companion book that is released either now or very soon. Check it out. I'm sure Amazon has it and other booksellers do. Just look up Video Palace book, maybe. He's got a short story in there that he wrote. A bunch of other writers also write along the similar lines of these strange videotape that
yeah.
drives a person mad or something like this.
Mm-hmm. You can also check out the web series that he does with Bob DeRosa called 20 Seconds to Live, which is a series of shorts where you can imagine the premise. It is called 20 Seconds to Live.
There's a countdown clock in everyone that has the 20-second mark until the person dies. Sorry
right.
for spoilers. But there are various different types of stories, and they're all pretty much dark humor
mm-hmm.
laced. I don't think any of them are actually serious, but they are all kind of gory and horror themed.
Mm-hmm. Dark humor is something that I closely associate with Ben Rock, actually. So.
Absolutely.
All right.
So I think we should get on with the show.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Ben. So, like, what's the movie that you don't like? Wait, don't answer yet, because you came to us with two movies.
I did.
One that you don't like and one that you do like. And then you came upon a problem after rewatching both of them. So, what do you have? Seriously, what is it? What's the, okay, the very first one? What have you decided that you do not like?
So you want me to talk about the one I did not like first?
Yes, yes. Just name that.
It was The Happy Time Murders, directed by Brian Henson, starring Melissa McCarthy and a bunch of puppets.
Someone out there is killing puppets. We're going to catch the person who did these murders.
I think I found the murder weapon.
Gotta be kidding me.
You're one of the best damn cops I've ever seen.
You know, bag of crap yourself.
I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say thank you to that.
Hit the town, hit the turf, walk the earth.
Fight the test.
Mommy, pull my gun?
No, unless you're talking about your wiener.
The Happy Time Murders, rated R.
I didn't see it when it came out in theaters because I had just become a dad, like, right around that time. And so I wasn't really going to movies. It came out in August of 2018, and I had a two-month-old at that time. So there was no chance I was going to see that movie in the theater. My interest was piqued. I like Melissa McCarthy. It's directed by Brian Henson, who I believe is Jim Henson's son.
Yes.
So to me, that all sounded interesting. And then when it came on cable, I watched it. And from frame one, I was like, oh my God, this is trying too damn hard. And I couldn't get into it. But that doesn't get to the change of heart that I've had. Do you want to go into the other movie? Because here's the thing is I feel like I violated your rules, because I brought a movie that I did like and a movie that I didn't like. And then I rewatched them both and realized that I had them backwards, that I no longer liked the movie that I thought I liked. And that the movie...
Okay, then what is the movie now that you flipped? What is it? Which one is it?
The one that I like now is The Happy Time Murders, hilariously. Like, it's not going to change your life, but I thought it was a much better film. And do I need to not talk about the other one?
You need to talk about the other one.
So the other one is Peter Jackson's second feature, Meet the Feebles.
Just once in a lifetime, there comes a motion picture so courageous, so explosive, that all else pales in comparison. A motion picture that breaks with convention, disregards taboos, risks 90 days in jail, and digs deep into hitherto unexplored regions. This is such a picture. The barriers are down. Sex.
I'm hot, but not the way you think.
Drugs. Animal husbandry.
Why did you bring it here? It's not mine. You know it's not.
Corruption. From the killing fields of Vietnam to the playing fields of Beverly Hills.
Oh, what the heck? That, you bastard.
This is the motion picture that dares to probe the secret innermost fears.
It's the big one, Harry.
No, it can't be. I've taken precautions.
That eats at the heart, that tears at the soul.
Please, God. I know I've been a bad bunny.
From Peter Jackson, the director who gave you Bad Taste, comes a movie with no taste at all. Meet the Feebles, a motion picture that gives all it's got. Meet the Feebles, the adult puppet movie with something to offend everyone. Please, don't tell your friends how it all comes out in the end.
Which is sort of like the Muppet Show in hell. It's these Muppets that look like they were, you know, fished out of the bay.
Oh my God, do they?
Yes.
That's the best descriptor. I'm thinking about how they're designed and the sketches that might go into how they're designed, and they're terrible looking, but
yeah, they're,
by design, they're terrible
they're
looking.
They're cheap.
But you just said pulled out of the bay, and it makes sense now.
Yeah, they all just look like corpses of better puppets. And it's a lurid film intentionally, you know, where it's trying to be edgy and shocking. And I think that the thing is, I saw this movie in the theater, I want to say it was 1994 or 1995. It came to my local art house theater in Orlando where I was going to college, the Enzian Theater, where I worked for many years, actually. But I wasn't working there at the time, and it was late night, Friday and Saturday, 2 weeks only. I was at every show. I dragged everybody I knew that I
wow.
could, and I was just all in. Now, I was a fan of Peter Jackson's from Bad Taste, which was his first feature.
Mm. Yeah.
And I love basically all of his movies until the end of the Lord of the Rings trilogies, and then I haven't been as much of a fan of his other films. But, you know, like his early stuff, Dead Alive, which was called Brain Dead in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Mm.
Which, by the way, the extended or unrated cut, he's right in that the rated R cut in the States is the best cut. I did an episode for What Did We Just Watch that went into the extended, like a composite of all versions of that film, and it was a slog. Oh. So he's right to cut a bunch of stuff.
You never go wrong alive, cutting too. So. There are very few movies I've ever seen where I was like, wow, I wish that had been a lot longer. But, you know, but like, you know, he did those movies and then he did Heavenly Creatures, which I think caught everyone by surprise because it's such a beautiful,
yeah,
brilliant film.
Yeah, it did. Also a total turn from what he did previously, which was this and,
yeah, and then he did the
Dead Alive.
Then he did The Frighteners, which is goofy fun. And then he did the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And, you know, he was, you know, off to being, you know, one of the major voices of that time. But Meet the Feebles was one that I always loved. I have a very rare DVD that was released by some sketchy ass distributor here in America that even cut off the first syllable of the first word on the release. But it was the only version I could get. Obviously, if you're watching it, as I think we all did on Tubi, that is a terrible transfer. The transfer doesn't do the movie any favors.
It's a VHS transfer. It's the lowest. It's like been recorded off of a VHS and shipped around to their buddies. And they each person recorded all, and then they gave the tape back. So it's got all these.
It kind of suits it, though.
Artifacts.
Like,
yes, actually, it does. I agree with
it. Kind of.
I don't want to watch a 4K version of this movie.
Exactly. I mean, I would be interested to see it if they restored it, if they did retransfer it. But yeah, it does kind of feel like it came out of a greasy VHS sleeve that somebody left in a in a blood splattered, you know, portfolio on a bus. Like, it just
I think not blood. I think it would just be pizza grease, honestly.
Yeah.
Come on. There's your nihilism poking up again.
You're right. You're totally right. But I was just surprised because I remembered that movie being extremely, you know, edgy and funny and daring and, you know, what people would say today, politically incorrect, you know.
Oh, it's absolutely 100% done, and it's decidedly done that way.
But
which it's from New Zealand, so I don't know the culture down there, how stuffed shirt and starched collar it might be versus in America at the time. Which was kind of at the tail end of Reagan, and into Bush one, so it was kind of still stiff, and there was some kickback, but not a whole culture of kickback. It was really. I don't know.
But it's, I mean, the thing is that, like, what was shocking about it, even in the 90s, I feel like in a post Team America World Police world, it's hard to look at, like, oh, it's edgy puppet humor. And it feels like an old man telling you a joke that he thinks is a dirty joke that you're like, yeah, I'm ahead of you. I'm ahead of you the whole time. And I mean, it still has some good moments of it. But I feel like also if this movie came out today, and I mean, you know, it didn't come out today. It came out in 1989. But I feel like it would be definitely branded as kind of racist and homophobic and a lot of punching down kind of things. Mm-hmm. We would look at today and be like, meh, like it's just not all that funny. And, you know, there are things like the rat puppet Trevor is super gross, almost looks like he's made out of a real hollowed out rat. He smokes cigarette. And it's like, it was shocking, I think, even then, just to see a puppet that smoked and that smoked real smoke. You know, it was.
Well, he reminded me of Ratso Rizzo from the Muppets, because the very first movie I saw in the theater was Muppets Take Manhattan.
Oh, wow.
I'm sad to say. And Ratso Rizzo is a big part in there. And I'm not sure, because I haven't seen it in a very long time, if Ratso smokes or something like that. But it just seems like appropriate that this York cigarette smoking busboy rat, you know?
So watching both of them back to back, you know, the Happy Time Murders, I found myself kind of swept up in it. And, you know, again, it's not there won't be film history books written about it. But I found it to be kind of a series of a lot of dick jokes.
Yeah.
But they were more sophisticated dick jokes than Meet the Feebles' dick jokes. Granted, you know, it's, you know, whatever, 30-something years later.
Yeah.
You know, there were some moments of, like, laugh out loud hilarity for me. I mean, I really like sitting around the house. I don't know if everyone's like this, but it's like I'm much less likely to laugh at something watching it at home by myself than I am you know, in a theater full of people,
and, like, with people. Yeah.
And, you know, but like there's that scene where the character ejaculates silly string for seemingly 5 minutes, and you know, that was a funny sight gag that just kept going and kept going and kept going,
with amazingly not getting any on the girl.
Yeah. That's so funny. Like, now back to Feebles, though. Feebles the story, since, I don't know, this is a podcast, we have to touch on the story just a little bit.
Okay.
It's a behind the scenes of, is it the premiere night of this Muppet Show sort of thing or what?
Yeah, yeah, it's like their new big review. I mean, honestly, it's pulled right out of the Muppet Show. Like, the Muppet Show was always about, like, hey, we got to put the big shows coming together and, you know, there's yeah. all the backstage backstabbing, except for this is like, you know, weird sex parties and cocaine and when puppets get run over by a barrel, they're reduced to like a slushy,
splat.
Bloody mess, yeah. you know, like they bleed blood. Actually, and that's a big difference between this and Happy Time, where they don't bleed blood. They just have fuzz in their bodies. But
and this one has an AIDS scare in it, because there's an announcer rabbit, I suppose, yeah. is a promiscuous hedonist who just does drugs,
yes,
and has sex constantly, and then he gets sick, and it's like the rapid AIDS.
Yeah, fast acting AIDS.
24 hour AIDS. I got the 24 hour AIDS. Not to make too light of it, but that's what the movie does. It makes too light of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of making a cheap joke out of that. It makes a cheap joke out of PTSD, which I don't know. I do find it funny, but I watch it and I'm like, it's a little cringy funny. It's like,
like all of the Vietnamese puppets are very caricature.
Oh my God. Super racist.
Kind of a cruel way. Yeah.
Super racist. Cruel. Although my favorite part, probably the biggest laugh I get out of the movie to this day, is when these, and you can't minimize that they are kind of racist in their construction, but these Vietnamese puppets start talking about communist theory. And
That was actually, that's the other joke in the movie. Because Elby was saying, what were you saying?
Okay, well, first of all, I was really not excited for your choices.
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
No, this is, we like the challenge.
Yeah,
we really do appreciate the challenge.
So it's totally fine. But I was like, my entire life I've been trying to avoid Meet the Feebles. Not because I, like, I don't know. Okay, so I kind of have a thing against puppets, but it's not like I'm afraid of them or anything. It's just that they kind of disturb me. And, like, that comes from the Spit and Image music videos from my youth. Like the Genesis music video and stuff like that. Like, it really kind of disturbed me as a child. So, like, I have this thing against puppets, but, like, I can handle Muppets. But, like, I always thought that Meet the Feebles was just gross looking. So I was like, I really don't want to watch this movie. But okay, so when we put it on, my first thought was like, is this a comedy? Because I couldn't really find the comedy in it, other than just the juxtaposition, the obvious juxtaposition of like this, the wholesome Muppet Show versus this like underbelly of the Muppet Show.
Yeah.
So I had a hard time like figuring out what the jokes were, honestly. Like, because it just seemed really forced to me. But you know, like, it's a different time now, so...
Yeah, comedy always ages like that. I mean, I do think that, like, for instance, The Fly, who is, like, the evil reporter that's trying to, you know, get dirt on everybody and eats poop with a spoon. You know, it's a pretty obvious joke.
That is... That's also that's a joke. Really disgusting. Yes. Okay, so there's three jokes. Yeah. The one joke is that these are Muppets in a horrible Beyond the Valley of the Dolls type of... Or Showgirls type of thing. Severe melodrama, which is itself... a satire of the thing that came before it, that it's satirizing. So
it's very meta.
I don't know what Showgirls is satirizing, but I know that Beyond the Valley of the Dolls is satirizing Valley of the Dolls, and that's actually what I was kept on thinking about this. It's like the behind the scenes version of the Muppet Show of Valley of the Dolls.
I never thought about
Meet the Feebles.
I think that's a really great way to look at it. I never really thought about that. I always thought that it was sort of like a criticism of show business. So it was taking something that was wholesome, which is the Muppet Show, where everyone has their wacky persona, but at the end of the day they pull it together and the show goes on, and you know, they all ultimately mean well and get over their egos. And this is the opposite of everybody just steering into their worst instincts and maybe saying that's really what show business is all about. You know, like, I think about,
so in a way this is Lynchian.
Maybe
in that he shows the underbelly.
I would love to see David Lynch's Meet the Feebles. That I would put big money to see.
Okay, I would really
I would
that.
Too. I think we would all, but they would all look like the baby in Eraserhead. He's like, I'm not gonna tell you how I made them. It's a real thing. So, no, okay, I was just trying to get cinephile on everybody.
If I had watched this in 1989, I probably would have thought, well, okay.
Not 89.
No, okay, I mean, like, if I was of age to watch this in 1989, I probably would have thought that it was very transgressive and subversive and brilliant.
Yeah, which is what I thought when I saw it in whatever, 1994, 1995, I felt that way about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I think, like, 2005 or 6 or something, I got a hold of it, and I didn't really like it because of griminess, and I'm an absolute square about things. But however, like, Trainspotting is one of my favorite movies, mm-hmm. so also I'm not. So I guess it was, maybe I just didn't like his attitude, right? So this That's time fair. Watching it, I still didn't like it, and I still pick up the attitude, but guess what? I've loosened up a whole heck of a lot. So I wasn't really cussing out the movie or anything. I was just rolling with it. And there are things that are amusing, but I don't think, again, there's a lot of jokes except for, like, those three. I really like the communist theory joke.
That was,
I
it was a good was bit. Yeah, no, that was
hell
solid.
Of a amusing. Like, I was just like,
I mean, there are things like,
do you see,
like,
what they're saying? It's like, because it's all subtitled.
There's a little fish that has a number that he said will go down a treat with Bletch, and then Bletch eats him after he does the number and says it did go down a treat. Mm-hmm. Burp. And, you know, I mean, to me, yeah. to me, stuff like that is, you know, it's jokey jokes, but it's also sort of like saying, maybe not the most groundbreaking thing, but that, you know, show business eats your soul and horrible people succeed in it.
Ah, yes, yes. And everybody's backstabbing. Like, really, it's just a backstabby.
Yeah.
Everybody's gross. Like, who the worm is, like, the only guy that's nice, right?
Yeah, the worm is pretty good. He had a pretty serious smoking habit, but yeah.
Oh, right. I mean, that would get you a rated M on Netflix these days.
For sure.
Or TV-14, smoking. it's true. Like,
no,
you'd be like, why is this thing? It's like Whale Rider. Roger Ebert was so mad about Whale Rider getting a PG-13 because there was a scene in which a guy, the uncle, lights up a spliff on the porch, and it's not even 3 minutes. It's like 30 seconds or something. It's just very brief, and they're like, PG-13! That was in the late 90s or something.
What I love about the PG-13 rating is you can say the F word once and get a PG-13. If you say it twice, you get an R rating. And mm-hmm. and I don't really understand how the repetition of that word twice in a 90-minute movie. Like, if you can hear it once, you can hear it twice. If you can hear it once...
But yeah. It used to not be that way. There was, like, a soldier's story, which is a really fantastic film about a black soldier in, I think, a military academy, or he's under some other black soldier.
I'm like so elderly that I saw that movie in the theater. Thank you very much.
That had a lot of F-bombs, if I recall, and that was rated PG, but that was before 13 happened, I think. But my dad had me watch that too, and we were like, because the superior officer is actually a racist against blacks, but he's also black. It's just a very complicated film. Yeah. You saw that in the theater? Holy crap.
My dad took me to see it in the theater, yeah.
Wow. Now, I didn't see this movie in the theater at all. It didn't come around to where I was.
Feebles?
Yeah, Feebles. There were midnight movies that happened in my neck of the woods, and it was like Army of Darkness or, you know, I think Six String Samurai or something, yeah.
That was and is, I think, the only full-time art house theater in Orlando, and it's independently programmed, and they've got a really good programming staff. They also run the Florida Film Festival, which is, in my opinion, one of the best film festivals I've ever had a film play at, but also I used to work there. I was a projectionist there for 2 years, and I kind of got in my head like, oh, all film festivals are like this. And then when I got my films on the festival circuit, I realized I had it better than I could have ever imagined at Florida. It was such a good festival, but they always did cool late night, you know, kind of grindhousey stuff. They didn't do it every week, but they would do it frequently enough so you'd get movies like Pink Flamingos or whatever from time to time. It was and is, if you find yourself in Orlando, Florida after this pandemic and you're allowed to go see movies in a theater, go to the Enzian. They're really an amazing theater.
What theater is it?
Enzian, Enzian.
Okay.
NZN.org, you can find all their programming. But yeah, I was
cool.
I was a projectionist there. And in fact, when I worked on the Blair Witch Project, I was working there, and they had told me when they hired me, if you leave, you know, to go work on a movie, just let us know and you can come back. And I left and came back. Mike Manillo was the marketing director. And then he shortly after that left to become part of Hacks and Films. I mean, he was involved in Blair Witch, but he like was able to quit. I was there until I moved to LA. And then Blair Witch ended up being one of the most successful films they ever ran there. And they had two of the people who'd worked on it were on staff when it was made.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a wonderful place. It's one of those movie theaters where you can get dinner while you watch the movie. They have waiters that come around.
Oh, that's...
They have the process really refined now.
Down here, there's a few theaters that do that stuff too.
The best one is Alamo Drafthouse. Nobody does it better than Alamo Drafthouse.
Yeah, that's actually... Down here, there was a theater. It's called Bistro, and that was an Alamo. They built it, and then the deal went through. We're 8 miles from Mexico, so I don't know what that has to do with anything, but that's just logistics to tell people where we are from, you know, Austin or whatever. So we're like really close to the border, and they had an Alamo down here, and then the deal fell through after they built the place, and so somebody bought it up and called it the Bistro. So
Like when I was at Fantastic Fest in 2008, I got to see how Alamo Drafthouse did it. And then they opened one out in here in LA within the last couple of years. Mm. And I've only been there once. I saw Parasite there. But it was a little different, but still like seamless, which I think is pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is a huge digression.
We don't have midnight movie theaters down here either. Well, I guess there's the El Rey, which I guess tried to do it. They had some horror club thing, but all they do is show basic stuff and nothing interesting. Like, I got to see the trailer for Cemetery Man back in the day, and I was super excited that I got to see just even the trailer on the big screen. I wanted to see the full movie, but that never came. But I was just like, this is amazing.
Well, if you like that, I know for a fact that you would love LA, because we have the best movie theaters in the world, in my opinion, and all kinds of crazy screenings of the most obscure stuff you've ever heard of is like a constant thing. And there's the new Beverly Cinema, which is the one that's owned by Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
And long before he bought it, but also after he bought it, I've been to that place a million times. And sometimes it would be like, oh, it's a double feature and I've heard of one of the movies and I haven't heard of the other one. I'll just go see both.
Right.
Oh, nice.
And it's pretty amazing. There was also the silent movie theater, which I forget what they're calling now. For a while, it was called Cine Family, and they had amazing programming, but apparently there was an issue with one of the owners and they ended up losing it. But like, I saw, what is it? The Visitor, that weird Italian.
Yeah.
I saw that. I mean, I saw a ton of movies there. I saw Robot Jocks there once.
Like, oh no. You know,
it was a great
slow-mo robot fights. Very
Robot
slow.
Jocks with Stuart Gordon there to introduce it.
Oh, okay. So Meet the Feebles, I'm going to tell you how I discovered it. It was through Film Threat. So I heard about it a long time before I actually even saw it. So Film Threat magazine, I lived in Southern California, but it was Moreno Valley. And there was one place that it was just I forget. It ended up turning into a Sam's Club or something. But before that, and that's actually where I used to rent stuff. We hardly ever rented videos until I got the job at Blockbuster in 98. So from 85 to 98, we hardly ever rented anything, and we would rent there at this grocery store, if anything. But that grocery store had Ray Gun magazine, which is highly influential on me. That's actually when I did that work for Ball for you.
Yeah.
All that theory that I implemented in that design came from just staring at Ray Gun magazine pages over and over and not
even... Oh, wow.
So it's just not even thinking about it. It's just like, I'm not even that good at it, but it's totally influenced by Ray Gun magazine design styles. But Film Threat was sitting there, and I would get Film Threat and its sister cartoon, whatever magazine, which had Ren and Snippy. So it's around the same time as that and Freaked came out. So it was hitting stateside around like 93 and 94. Like, that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
94 is when you saw it?
That's probably about the time I saw it. And you and I might be in sync on this, because I think I might have also learned about it in Film Threat.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it was Film Threat. And LB, I don't know how you learned of it at all. Meet the Feebles.
Yeah, I don't have a specific memory for that, but I do know that I always got it mixed up with Meet the Applegates.
Right, which is an early 90s movie too. So
yeah, so I don't know.
Big roaches.
I can't tell you.
Okay, so I'm assuming that it's maybe just some MTV thing or some magazine.
Yeah, probably MTV. That's where I got all my cultural knowledge growing up.
I don't even remember
Tennessee.
I didn't watch all the big pictures or anything either. So, but you watch all the big pictures.
Yeah.
That TV show, Big Picture. All right. So now we get to, I think we've covered Meet the Deedles. Meet the Deedles. That's the other thing that I get confused with.
Yet,
because I keep saying it. I keep saying it wrong in my head, and then I correct before, but this time it happened. But I do secretly like Meet the Deedles too. But
that's no secret.
I know it's not. But nobody knew that until I just said it, so it was a secret except for you. You know, Meet the Deedles is absolutely dumb, but like it's a Disney movie with Dennis Hopper. I mean, and some prairie dogs that he weaponizes. It's, come on.
I've never seen that one.
There's some decent stuff in it.
I'm Captain Pine. Who's Mel and who's Mo?
We are, sir. I'm Mel.
And I'm Mel. I mean, I'm Mo.
We switch back and forth since Mel and Mo are just nicknames. Like, Jesse is short for Jessica.
Yeah, and Captain Pine is short for Captain Pine.
What are Mel and Mo short for?
Oh, villains do. Deedle.
It's a stupid joke, and I love it. Stupid, but I love it. Anyway, so now we get to talk about what you like.
Andrew.
What? Okay, what?
Andrew, hold on. First of all, Ben, we do this every episode.
Yeah, and I always correct her, too, because she's going to say something that's incorrect.
Yeah.
That's her.
Why are you trying to skip over my deal here, Andrew?
I'm not. It's a really bad sort of like a George and Gracie sort of shtick that we do, too. Continue, Gracie.
Okay. Well, you know, I was at my parents' house recently.
Nope, not recent, but we can continue.
Just let me have it, okay?
That's the correction. I got it out of the way really fast. Go.
And okay, so I was like, you know, going through some of the stuff that they have in their little attic, their whatever.
It's not an attic. It's a shed. I said this last time. It's a shed.
You're a shed. I found this like old notebook that I had in high school. You know, like I wrote a bunch of just, you know, dumb like teenage girl poetry, and it all turns out to be about movies. It's really strange, but I found this one poem that seems to be, I don't know, maybe related to Meet the Feebles.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why don't you read it to us?
You want to read it to you?
Okay. Yeah.
I want to hear it now.
With a New Zealand accent, please.
Oh, no, I can't do accents. You know,
New Zealand is so specific too.
Can you try? How you get into it? You say Brit instead of Brett. You go Brit, and then you can speak in a New Zealand accent.
I doubt it.
All right.
Brit. Nope.
You just said nope. How are we to say that's nope? Your nope was very New Zealand.
Was it?
Yep.
Well, I don't know. Okay. Okay. Here we go. This sort of sounds familiar, too. I don't know. I think I was listening to some mid-90s music while I wrote this, too. So I don't know. But anyway, here we go. It goes...
Just living on Sunday morning. Got my coffee, cream, and my porn in. I just thought I'd think about blue felt keeps getting bluer. There were no blue, no, not a branding. I just thought I'd think about... Comfort of a knowledge that rises above the sky, above the never parallel challenge of an acquisition of a puppet that fucks. Puppet that fucks.
All right, Ben, what do you think of that?
Is it about me, the Feebles?
I know.
Well, you said blue felt.
I think
we got to Blue Felt and we got to the very, very end. But I mean, like, you know,
it wasn't really Meet the Feebles, was it?
The Blue Felt and a sexualized puppet. It could just have been like you had a thing for Guy Smiley from Sesame Street. I have a 2-year-old, so I'm constantly watching Sesame Street and coming up with inappropriate thoughts about it. So. could have been Cookie Monster. We don't know. Grover.
Grover. I liked Grover when I was a child.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
You know, and I think that maybe watching both of these movies back to back while I am kind of consumed in Sesame Street because I'm watching TV with a 2.5-year-old and kind of appreciating honestly how good Sesame Street really is and how well written it is and how obviously they know that parents are stuck watching this and so they're like throwing us the occasional joke that will go way over the kid's head but not be, you know, it's not dark or weird or anything like that. It's just, they're just not going to get it. But it's interesting to watch that and then go kind of like right into 2 dirty puppet movies. Because I'm always kind of like peeling away the layers of, in my mind, narratively, of what's going on Sesame Street. And, you know, like how, if Big Bird was real, how Big Bird would fully murder all of us, you know, stuff like that.
So I kind of don't really like the Muppets. Well, I actually don't. I'm not going to say kind of. don't. I think there are well, absolutely love the puppetry of the Muppets or most other puppetry stuff. I really respect it. It's amazing. My mom also made puppets, but these were generic gospel puppets. So they all had the same head shape, which is somewhat of an egg on its side with the mouth slit, you know. And they had like ping pong ball eyes and interchangeable wigs that you could put on like with Velcro or needles or pins, you know. Like that was the scary one with the pins. You're like, ouch, you know, when you're doing what All the Children of the World song, and she has literally every song. That song is, it would be today as it was recorded, kind of considered racist because it tries to audibly represent the musical styles of each child. So when they say red and yellow, black and white, they go red and it's an Indian, hiya, 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 hiya. Yellow, it's Asian. Black, it's soul. And white is, I think it's people who wear clogs. Mm-hmm. But that would be represented in the song, so like... She had to have puppets. Yeah, the naivety of certain religious-minded people. Even back then, I was just like, oh my gosh, really? What are you doing? But I understand puppetry, and I really respect it. I can do puppetry because of that. It's fun, and it's cool. And one Halloween, LB and I did dress up as puppets. Do you remember Syphil and Ollie?
I don't know.
MTV, back in the late 90s, had a show called Syphil and Ollie. It was Liam Lynch. It was his show. He had a song called...
Oh, I love Liam Lynch.
My United States of America. Oh, of whatever, sorry. Of whatever. Because this is my United States of whatever. And this is my United States of
whatever. You do that every time.
I do that every time, but kind of. It's the same thing.
He also like directs. He directs all of Sarah Silverman's stand up shows.
And he
like,
did Pick of Destiny. He directed that.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
For Tenacious D. So he had this show called Syphil and Ollie, and they were puppets and
sock puppets.
Sock puppets, and they have plush animal eyes and dog nose on one of them. And so I got all the pieces off of eBay, and I made these puppets. And so instead of dressing fully up, we just put the socks on our arms. And we went out for Halloween, and people were like, what are you guys dressed as? And we'd just raise our hand and be like, hello, you know? They'd be like, still, we don't know what that is. It's Syphil and Ollie. Didn't you watch MTV in 1998? Maybe.
I've never seen it.
There are episodes on YouTube, so you can check that out. But
I will definitely look for it.
The puppetry stuff always seemed like, as a kid, I liked the puppetry, but I didn't like the content of it. Because as a kid, like at 6 years old, I was like, Jaws is a good movie, guys. I didn't have anybody to say that to, but I was still...
When you're dealing with like two and three-year-olds and they're learning how to count, it really is helpful. But I get you. Sesame Street, when I was a kid, was maybe aimed at slightly older kids, and maybe when you were that age, maybe it was aimed...
Older. I wasn't in America at the time.
Oh.
Yeah, so I missed out on Sesame Street and all that stuff.
Yeah, when I was a little kid, you know, I remember watching Sesame Street, and then also, like, again, I'm so old that I remember when The Muppet Show was on network television, my parents would have me watch it.
I would watch syndication stuff. Like in 85, I think that was still in syndication, and I was familiar with The Muppet Show. And of course, The Muppet Movie, I saw that in Holland. So,
oh yeah. So there was a couple years ago here in LA at the Skirball Center, there was a Jim Henson exhibit. Mm-hmm. And it was right after my son was born, actually. And we had Alicia's parents came one weekend, and my sister and her family came the next weekend. And we took them both to see the Muppet exhibit. And it was pretty amazing. Well, it was a Henson exhibit. So it covered Muppets, and they had like the actual Muppets there for a lot of the Muppet Show Muppets and some of the Sesame Street Muppets, but it also had models from the Dark Crystal, not models, but puppets, and Labyrinth and stuff like that. And it was just amazing to kind of see them, mm-hmm. you know, in person and see the amount of detail and artistry that went into them. But also like the whole exhibit kind of walked you through Jim Henson's entire genesis into becoming the person he became, because he always wanted to be a filmmaker and a storyteller. And he was kind of a little different and weird in a time when it was kind of normal to be a little different and weird, kind of a mm-hmm. hippie time. Mm-hmm. But he found an interesting niche. And I actually feel like it's impossible to watch both of these movies and not see them both as either a criticism or a play on Jim Henson, really. Like mm-hmm. Jim Henson codified these kinds of characters and the way these characters kind of look. And so, you know, even though, you know, Meet the Feebles, the puppets all just kind of look like they're a bunch of condoms stitched together.
Bloated. Still, yeah.
They have a feeling of a Jim Henson, like a copy of a copy of a copy of Jim Henson's fever dream. And right. in the Happy Time Murders, they all just, I mean, it is Jim Henson's son directing it.
So they look like Muppets, yeah.
They all straight up look like Muppets.
And they're all unique looking Muppets, so just directly made for this movie, so they all each have a design.
Yeah.
So they're not necessarily ripping off other Muppet designs.
Another movie that I think that Happy Time Murders kind of rips off or references is Who Framed Roger Rabbit,
oh.
where you take fantasy yes. characters and just drop them right into reality and kind
yeah.
of ask,
yeah.
what would life be like if they were just walking around and they looked like that?
Yeah, I actually picked that up too, and I actually really appreciate that about it, because I really do like Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I may not be
Love
a
it.
Disney guy or in general, even though I'm an illustrator, I'm not that big on animation, but even though I respect the art too, but Roger Rabbit's a really good one, and it does align with this one a lot. Now, for a second, LB and I went to Unclaimed Baggage. Where was that?
Somewhere in Alabama.
Alabama. Unclaimed Baggage is like where all the unclaimed baggage of the world goes. In America, I should say. That's the world, right?
Really?
So when they lose your luggage and you don't
claim it,
they send it to the store. The store buys it.
Weird.
Yeah.
They buy it. Yeah. So you can go and get iPads, like, for super cheap.
Yeah.
You can get iPads. You can get all sorts of tech and stuff like that. But they, Jim Henson folks, lost a Labyrinth character. It was in Unclaimed Baggage for years, but it deteriorated. So somebody came in and they restored it, but badly. So it's like a bad facelift.
Ooh.
Instead of like the felt material or the soft material, which would deteriorate over time, it's now like a hard kind of lacquer over it. It's really gross looking. But yeah, that's the in person that we saw Jim Henson product puppet.
Yeah.
So we saw the Meet the Feebles version of the Jim Henson exhibit.
But accidentally, yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So this movie is a gumshoe detective story, which I appreciate those. It's a bit conventional, I'd say. Everything is, like you said earlier, sort of set up so that you could have a bunch of adult humor wrapped around this. In any other kind of movie, if it wasn't a comedy, it would be kind of a thin detective story. It's not like it's a Dirty Harry Deadpool or anything. Though yeah,
it's not the Usual Suspects. I would love to see the Usual Suspects done with puppets. Just, I mean, nobody's ever done that where they've made a movie. And this is a thing where theater and film go very differently, because in theater, you would see a puppet show that was like deadly serious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we're going to do Chekhov, but we're just going to do it with puppets. But there's like a hardcore reason to do it. And in my theater travels, I've done exactly one play that employed puppets, and they did get a laugh. But it was a Vonnegut play, so...
You know, okay, it's already Vonnegut.
It's already a little funny. Yeah. We had a guy in a dog suit, and we had a guy dressed up as a weird robot from Tralfamador. But yeah, you're right. You're not going to have a hard time figuring out who done it. It's not that kind of movie. That's all just kind of a shell that's there so that we can have a bunch of, puppet dick jokes.
I do think that as much as it could, they tried to play everything straight or legit, except for Melissa McCarthy, whose shtick is... bigger and more, I don't know. She's like, I'm not criticizing her because I really like her.
Yeah.
But when she talks, it's like obviously funny.
She's doing a bit.
Yeah.
She's always doing a bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And especially in this, she's always doing a bit. We've seen her elsewhere not do the bit on camera. Like we loved Gilmore Girls when that was on. That's how we first discovered her, just like most of America. She did serious in that, and she was also the plucky sidekick comedy, you know, in that. But it wasn't necessarily the way that she's known for in film. And in film, she just took off in that direction mostly. I like that she's trying to do different things now. But this was also, like, when we saw the trailer for this, we were like, no, absolutely not. Because the trailer showed us only the kind of the mundane version of everything. everything that we're all familiar with that is in this movie. And some of that is her comedy. And it just seems so commonplace and like low-hanging fruit. And really it is, however.
Well, it's very funny. I feel like a lot of it also, it's driving through the tracks that the Feebles drove through 35 years earlier to a degree, you know, where it's like, again, we have characters that smoke. We have puppets getting murdered. You know, we see the inside of them. In Feebles, they're full of organs and blood. Mm-hmm. In this, they're just fluff. But it's actually, in a way, the shock humor is not very different often. Mm-hmm. That you're imagining the sex lives of puppets and, you know, puppets with drug problems.
And what's with the cow getting milked? That
yeah.
That was really like a cow getting milked by an octopus was really a bizarre sight. A lot of these things are much more smoothly set up and as far as the jokes go and the like,
for sure.
What? I'm sorry? Like, that octopus made two appearances, I do believe, and it's doing the same thing twice.
Yeah.
Milking the cow, and it's in a perverse kind of way. It's super bizarre. And he's like, can you close the door, please? Yeah, but I don't want to see it happen. I'm not prudish, but I just don't want to see it happen. Thanks. It's a lot tighter joke-wise. The other one seems like they didn't actually put thought into the jokes, just the punchlines.
I think that it's just a testament to how comedy changes over time. Because if you watch an old black and white comedy, like let's say, you know, you watch an old Billy Wilder comedy or something like that, yeah, it's easy to appreciate the filmmaking. It's easy to appreciate the artistry. But a lot of times the jokes just miss. Mm-hmm. Unless you can really contextualize it, you know, if you can put yourself in that time period. So I feel like, you know, in the 1980s, edgy comics were, you know, people like Sam Kinison or whatever. Right. Were like spewing all kinds of homophobic and racist stuff. And it was, at the time, unfortunately, beloved. And I feel like Feebles is kind of trucking in that kind of humor, mm-hmm, in a sense. And I feel like today it's both tasteless, punching down, and kind of obvious.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I can see the joke. I can see the joke coming, literally sometimes. You know, you can see the joke from a mile away, and I feel like Happy Time Murders, I don't know who, I mean, I'm actually looking at the IMDb page, I don't know the names of the writers, but my guess is they're comedy writers who write lots of comedy these days. And so right now we have kind of an affinity for kind of rapid fire stuff, and also like a lot of improv, and that's why you would hire somebody like Melissa McCarthy as well.
Yeah.
Is because she's great at improving and ad-libbing like a line here and a line there that, yeah, that adds up to, you know, a funnier script than maybe you even started with. Nothing against the writers, but I feel like it feels more modern, you know. Mm-hmm. And there are comedies that I think hold up over time. I recently watched Dirty Rotten Scoundrels from the same year, and I think that movie holds up pretty well. The comedy is still pretty funny, and I hesitate to say fresh because it wasn't really fresh. It wasn't fresh comedy. That wasn't what that movie was.
No, the comedy in that movie holds up, but the movie to me doesn't hold up. But the comedy bits, all the Steve Martin making all the jokes and then the twists on certain things and the reveals and the certain punchlines are absolutely gold. I don't think the movie holds up very much.
I was with it the whole way. By the way, directed by Frank Oz, the voice of Miss Piggy and Grover.
Yeah,
and
that's Yoda. How we connect it. That's how we connect it. Henson, yeah, is
I'll bring it all home, man. But I mean, I agree. I feel like with Happy Time Murders, the comedy feels, it's a puppet joke delivery mechanism, whereas Feebles is a little bit more of a Shaggy Dog kind of a, in its construction. I mean, I would almost say that Meet the Feebles, it wasn't amateur, but it was Peter Jackson's second movie. The budget couldn't have been that great.
Oh, no, they had hardly any budget, and they went over on it, and they went over on the time to make it. So
yeah,
it is a miracle of a movie, as they say.
Yes. It is miraculous.
I have a thing about comedy. Like if you watch Monty Python's Flying Circus, there's a lot of skits that actually are terrible, and there's a lot of stuff in that are not good just because of quality, and they had to get it out in record time in order to meet a deadline type of thing. But there's, like, the final Rip-Off album is basically their best hits throughout their career, and it's just all in audio, but it's still pulled from the show. And there are some bits that aren't on there that are still great, like the Killing Joke skit, which is top for me. But the Monty Python movies, they are constantly and still funny. Did they transcend time in that? Because, as you said, comedy changes over time, and the, Yeah.
I mean, some stuff holds up. I feel like, you know, looking at old classic movies, like Marx Brothers stuff still holds up. And a lot of the silent stuff, you know, Buster Keaton kind of stuff still holds up. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of times, you know, there's like a certain overriding timeless cleverness to that stuff. And I feel like something like both of these movies that we're talking about, neither one of them are really designed to be timeless. They are specifically referencing a really specific thing.
Right.
However, though, the Happy Time doesn't seem like it's actually hindered by too many current cultural references.
Oh, to be sure.
Like Roger Rabbit was, actually, because they keep on referencing stuff that actually exists.
Well, and Roger Rabbit was, the whole gag was that they were bringing together, you know, like Warner cartoons and Disney cartoons and all these real cartoons and then creating a fake bunch of characters that also existed at that time.
Yeah.
And I feel like Happy Time Murders isn't, you know, you don't have Kermit the Frog and Fozzie Bear in this, but I feel like the entire construction of the puppets as a group of characters is right out of Jim Henson.
Yes.
And maybe like the sitcom, the Happy Time Show or whatever it was called, is maybe a reference to something like ALF or something. I mean, not directly,
yeah,
but it's sort of...
It's like one human among a bunch of puppets as opposed to one puppet amongst a bunch of humans. But yes, I used to watch ALF and I loved ALF, so I'm not completely opposed to puppets. I just think the Muppets was always kind of corny or something. I think the John Denver aspect of it, I just didn't like as a kid.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
I was the perfect age for all of it, you know, like it was sort of coming into popularity.
Absolutely. You were, as I was, you're what, 5 years older than me, right? You're
69. I'm 49 years
no
old, yeah.
Okay, so you're 70. 71.
71,
71, yeah. Okay, yeah, so no, that totally makes sense. There's a shift in time in which I wasn't exposed to it, also by being in Europe, but also I wouldn't have been aware of the stuff that you were. So you're the age of one of my brothers, so that makes absolute sense why you connect to it more than I do, just by exposure.
No, I mean, I think that for people around, you know, in and around my age, I, for a certain kind of Gen Xer, you know, the Muppets are kind of like a giant piece of culture, and they managed to milk it for a long time because, you know, they even had the Saturday morning cartoon Muppet Babies, which was aimed at little kids.
Which doesn't make any sense. It's a cartoon. I mean, they're Muppets.
It's a cartoon, yeah. nothing makes sense anymore, but yeah, I mean, it's very meta, very meta. I'm sorry, I'm only going to do one more Sesame Street-related digression. But there's a regular segment called Elmo's World, where it's like this weird expressionistic room that Elmo lives in, that, like, you know, he has like a talking computer, and in later episodes a cell phone that tells him stuff, and everything is a puppet. There are like animal puppets and whatever, but there's a real goldfish, and every time I watch it, I'm like, what does that goldfish think is going on? Like, this is weird for the goldfish, because everything else is a bunch of puppets except there's a real goldfish named Dorothy. Anyway.
Okay, so I just, also another digression, I just want to say about my own puppet proclivities. I do think this movie is good for what it is, right? Ebert also suggested, take the movie for what it is and what it's trying to do. Does it succeed within its own rules and all that stuff? Yes, this movie does. Happy Time.
100%. 100%. 100%. Agreed.
There is another puppet thing that I do like, and it's a short series. It's called Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared.
Oh, I love that so much.
I just thought of that too.
And that is where my full-on puppet appreciation goes. Right there. That is it. It's from 2011 to 2016.
I don't know if y'all do show notes in your podcast, but if you do, you should definitely put a link to watch Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared. Somebody introduced me to that when I was up to my eyeballs in some of the more mind-numbing videos you show a two-year-old or under 2 years. Probably about 1.5, and somebody showed me that, and it was like, you know, he'd go to sleep, and it was weird because I'm watching something that kind of looks like a kid's show, but it's like
it's like the Nightmare Kids show, but it's so good.
We've brought up David Lynch too many times, but it is downright Lynchian, and I love it for that.
How can you have that as a full length film? I don't think you could. Like, so Happy Time Murders is the way to go. I think you don't want to alienate your audience too much.
You can't make something that I shouldn't say you can't. It's very difficult to make something that surreal and weird connect to the size of an audience you need to connect to if you make a feature film for tens of millions of dollars, which is what I'm assuming something like Happy Time Murders probably cost. So it's a difficult challenge. And what's cool about Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared, actually, is there's a puzzle in all the episodes if you watch them all, sort of like in the later episodes when they're going back through time and stuff. There's weird references to stuff that have been laid in from the beginning. It's kind of a genius construction narratively. As a feature, it might get a little great rating, it might be a little bit difficult. But yeah. I would also, in the same breath, I'd bring up, I don't know if you've ever seen the Belgian stop motion animated feature for A Town Called Panic.
Oh, yes, we did. See some of it at least.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that was like wall to wall joy. I saw that at Fantastic Fest in 2009, and I had no idea what I was walking into, and I loved every second of that movie. And it is kind of a challenge. It started as a series of shorts, and the shorts are, you know, like characters that scream a lot and stuff, so it can be a little much, but the movie worked. So I'd be interested to see, like, if you approach the Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared people and had them develop a feature
Something like that
had to kind of sustain, because a lot of those sketches devolve into sort of a psychotic fugue state.
Right, right.
And if you do that every 5 minutes in a movie, the audience will go, we'll just get bored.
Yeah.
They'll become numb to it and fatigued, I think.
Yeah.
So for Happy Time Murders, to me, it's a goes down, easy, straightforward, it's a fastball kind of a concept. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you know, Feebles is trying to be edgy and dark mm-hmm. and subversive. Happy Time Murders, it's kind of using subversion as a way to make you feel a little naughty for watching a pretty standard comedy.
Yeah. Right. It's
sleazy, but not grimy.
Right.
Yeah, you don't need to take a shower after you watch it. You won't feel gross.
You mentioned Team America before, which I guess is very similar. Their concept for Team America was to just like do this really ridiculous Michael Bay. They were just making fun of Michael Bay stuff, like the big America bravado type of jingoism found in his militaristic films. And then they were like, well, what if we did this with Jerry Anderson puppets? And they're like, ooh, Eureka. So I think satire wise or joke wise, it's very similar joke delivery mechanism. I don't think there's so many dick jokes in Happy Time Murders, but you were saying Team America didn't do
so
well.
There are tons of dick jokes. There's like where Melissa McCarthy literally bites him on the dick. There's the ejaculation scene.
Yeah, that's two.
You're right. I believe there are more. I didn't do a dick joke counter, but I would watch it again and notate every dick joke.
Yeah, you have to have your little number clicker. Click, click, click.
But, I mean, Team America, the thing is that, like, didn't do well. It bombed theatrically, I think. I love it. I think it's hilarious and generally holds up, although I feel like the Kim Jong-il impersonation stuff makes me feel a little gross today. But I don't know. I mean, those guys can get away with, I don't know how they do it. They really do kind of like have a teeter-totter of comedy where they can get away with virtually anything. And it's because they're so subversive.
Now, before South Park the movie came out, I was absolutely adamantly against South Park because whatever I saw of it was just gross humor at first, and I didn't really see the satire through it. Then I watched the movie and I was like, holy crap, this thing's hilarious. I get the satire. I get everything that it's talking about. Oh my god. Then I watched the series again after that, and I was like on board for a few years until I just lost interest because life. And
yeah,
like,
that happens.
Even
it's been on for 45 years.
Yeah, like the Paris Hilton episode where she takes in a pineapple.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, you guys are pushing some boundaries there. And then Team America comes out.
Have you seen their play? Have you seen the Book of Mormon?
No, I haven't.
If you only see one play in your entire life, make it the Book of Mormon.
Okay.
Duly noted. So, yeah, Team America joke delivery style, I think, is rather similar. But it's all puppets.
For sure.
And there's no human version of, like, the Roger Rabbit thing that's in.
Yeah, I think Roger Rabbit maybe is the best comparison in a way.
I actually was not expecting it to be decent, and it was far exceeding. And I don't like the my low expectations made it better. No, it didn't. It's just a decent comedy.
I must have just been in the worst mood of my life when I saw it before, because I just remember watching it and being like, oh god, you know, like I hated it. And I don't even know that I watched the whole thing the first time I saw it, you know, because when you have a new baby, you're so sleep deprived that you're just, there are movies that I was dying to see that I still haven't gotten all the way through the remake of Suspiria. And it's one of those things where, like, when I went to watch it again, I was like ready to hate it, ready to be like, oh, let me write a lunch list of everything that sucks about this movie. And then I was like, you know, it's all right.
Yeah, you know. It succeeds in everything that it set out to do.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah.
bottom line, it's funny. It's funny and it's never boring. So I'm good.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I think we all agree on all counts, really, pretty much. I mean, your personal story with Meet the Feebles is unique to you, and mine is unique to me, and Elvie's is unique to hers. And I think we all kind of agree on the quality aspects of it, but you have much more love for it than we do. We have tolerance, I guess. So, but hey, what more can you ask for than tolerance, right? You don't have to
There we go.
So, thanks, Ben. I appreciate you being here.
Oh, always a pleasure.
Elby?
I can't believe we made it through this whole podcast without mentioning that marquee puppet movie.
Oh, right, where it's Marquis de Sade, and there's a penis puppet, literally talking
Never seen
penis
it.
Puppet. It's, I believe, on YouTube, so. There you go. Okay.
Never seen it.
Yeah, it's French, too.
I also didn't bring up Avenue Q, which is another, it's a Broadway musical that's all puppets, and it's all kind of, you know, puppets doing edgy comedy.
Risque. Ribald. Okay, thanks, Ben. Glad you're here.
Yeah.
Glad you did the show with us. LB, anything you got to say?
No, just, yeah, thank you.
Of course. Always a pleasure.
All right. Picture this, LB.
Yeah?
A movie, a comedy movie that doesn't feature Nobody Speak by DJ Shadow and Run the Jewels.
What?
I say this because it seems to be, and we didn't touch upon this, like, maybe as a negative. It's kind of negative because it's so ubiquitous now. It's in a bunch of car commercials, even.
Yeah. Picture this. I'm a bag of chips. Put me to your lips. Onion dip.
No, it's good. It wasn't planned at all that way. Get off the top of your head.
Yeah.
So it's so ubiquitous, this song now, even though it's a great song. I don't want to hear it ever in movies again. And I think this was... I think the Happy Time Murders might have been the first comedy to use it. Because when we heard it, and this is well after the fact of seeing Booksmart and Good Boys, etc. You have it in this movie. And we're like, oh, wait, no, this came first. This is the egg. Or is it the chicken? Either
I don't know.
Or.
I don't know, so. But I'm to the point where when I hear that, like, I just get, like, glossy-eyed. Like, I just stare into the distance because it just, like, takes my brain out of my head.
It's ubiquitous.
Yeah.
And since it's so present in our current culture, 2020, it kind of might even take you out of the movie or whatever you're watching.
Yeah, I mean,
if it doesn't take you out of a car commercial. I mean, it does, maybe. And then you'd be like, I don't want the car, but I kind of
Well,
like
it does. It does because that song says, I'm a bag of dicks. Put me to your lips. In a car commercial, that's really a little bit weird. It's like the same thing as me seeing Thomas Middleditch in Verizon commercials, like, knowing what his penis looks like. Yeah.
The entire movie, he's naked running around.
Yeah.
And they do not necessarily cut away from his dong. So.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
so it,
like,
it does take me out a little bit.
Okay. Granted, yes. So what was that car, though? What commercial was that car for?
Like,
I don't know.
Oldsmobile,
I'm just
or something.
Thinking about the bag of dick. But it's, granted, it's an instrumental track that they use for the commercial, but picture this, Oldsmobile. So, okay.
Yeah, anyway.
Ben, that was a digression that we didn't get to, but Ben is a great guest.
I
like him a lot. He's a very solid dude.
He's always a great guest, and he always has really interesting insights and knowledge about things, and I love talking to him. I could just listen to Ben Rock talk about anything.
Yeah, he's one of those inside men, you know? and he doesn't gossip, and that's the good part. He can have good stories and digressions. This episode is a lot of digressions, but it's not a complaint. This is how I talk, typically. And then we get Ben, who also talks that way. So it's a bit of a weave of an episode, and I appreciate that, though. It was difficult editing because of that.
All right, well, I think that does it, though.
Yeah, I think it does, too. That was a good episode. All right, so here's a little treat. Imagine Puppets. Good night, everybody.
Bye, good night.